You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, I was so glad because when I found out what we were going to be doing today, it reminded me that we had another really successful meeting of the council. And a really successful Fishers Forum, which we'll tell you about in a while. But it was the 176th meeting, and so you do the math. There's about three. In most years, there's about three, sometimes more. This is over the 40-odd year period, a pretty interesting one. And so to recap it, and this is always a good thing to do, we have Thomas Remington. He's a fisheries analyst with the council. And I don't want to say that you can all breathe a collective sigh of relief, but we've got a meeting in the book, and we did some. You and I did some stuff running up to the meeting. So, before we get into some of the details, just what did you expect, and did the things that you expected get done?
Well, we expected to, have a productive meeting as always. There's a few issues that we planned on tackling that we tackled. There were some things in the works, a couple months ago that mm-hmm. we had hoped to have done by the meeting time, but
some reports and things.
The government shutdown and there's been a lot of hectic happenings this year, let's say. So not everything happened as planned like we talked about a few months ago, but we still had a productive meeting and we made a path forward.
Okay, now that being said, I don't know if people understand the breadth and expanse of the meetings. It happens, people come from far and wide, and there's a long and ambitious agenda, which I saw and I thought, how are they going to get through all this stuff? Well, I don't know how you did it, but somehow you did it.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's a mountain of stuff to do.
What was it like in the beginning? What happened in the very beginning? Because one thing that Tom and I were talking about off the air, gang, is that there's always good news and bad news from these meetings, and we're going to try to give you most of the good news. But there's some that wasn't so good. We'll get into that as well. But that being said, it still means that everybody has to go there with certain expectations, and whether you get them, satiated or not, who knows?
Right. So, yeah, definitely two sides to the coin with every council meeting. Some things go the way we expected or the way we had hoped, per se, but there are definitely some things that didn't go as well.
I don't sometimes understand how the order of the meetings go. I get it now because I've been doing it for so long.
Right.
But that, I think, would be of interest to somebody to find out, how do you walk before you run? What happens in the very beginning? And when does it go from being lighthearted, hey, we're together, to get serious?
Well, it's kind of hard to say because it's a mixture of the two. We know these people and we work with them constantly, when it's time to get business done, it's time to get business done. When the council meetings are in session, that's really the only time we have to convene all these people and get these issues discussed and voted on. So,
okay, and we're going to talk about some of these specific ones in a minute. But first, that means, and particularly because our district is the largest in geography in the country,
area.
By far,
right,
that they come from far-flung places.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So I would imagine some of the folks that came, you hadn't met before.
Oh, there were some new people for sure. And, just people coming from far away places that I don't see all the time. We have members from the territories in Guam, the Commonwealth of the Marianas. Yeah. So we have people from Saipan and even American Samoa. Yeah. So, just all across the Pacific.
Yeah, and if you were with us last week we had the opportunity to get together and talk a little bit with the newest member, Josh Floyd, with Josh Floyd Masaka of Saipan. And you just met him too, because he's
right.
A newbie,
that was the
right?
first time I met him.
Okay, so right off the bat, what happened? What was some of the stuff that came out to set the stage for the good stuff?
Well, some of the good stuff that happened. There was a presentation of the 2018 stock assessment on Kona crab. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of people have let kind of Kona crab fall back in their minds. Maybe the fishery hasn't been as big as it has been in the past, but there's been a lot of good work going on there, a lot of good stock assessment scientists working on it, and they found that, this stock is healthy. There's a lot of potential for growth in this fishery. So even though there's been a lot of regulations that have kind of pushed this fishery down and made it so people don't even want to try, we can't take females, you can't, or take ones over a certain size. It really made the fishery dwindle from, tens of thousands of pounds being caught every year to just next to nothing.
Does it open the opportunity, based on the new stock assessment, say, hey, you know what, we can relax a little bit about this. It's a little bit more plentiful. That would then give the possible fisher the incentive to go out and try and create a market.
Right.
Recreate a market.
Exactly. It's about fishery development, you know, or redevelopment, I guess, in this case. It's just about the council saying to, you know, Hawaii's Department of Aquatic Resources, hey, this new science is suggesting that the stock is healthy. Maybe all these regulations aren't necessary to ensure that the stock survives if the stock is already doing so well.
Has technology been at the forefront of being able to be a little bit more accurate or certainly a little bit more factual about proving things when you're doing the stock assessment?
Absolutely. Yeah. That's without a doubt. I mean, it comes from all directions, too. The reporting, the analysis. Yeah. You know, anyone has a laptop can, you know, perform some sort of mathematical or statistical analysis if you know how. And then just the ease of reporting and sharing data has made it so, you know, there was a lot of situations in previous years, let's say, where the right hand wasn't talking to the left. So, you know, some people had data, but other people didn't have that same data. And a lot of those barriers have been broken down with the ease of email and data transfer and just everything like that.
Let me tell you what, I was impressed because for a couple of the days I was around and able to see and say hi to some of the guys and gals, and I was impressed with the number of devices that they're all carrying now. It didn't used to be that way, you know, and some people that would have a manila folder or a binder. Everybody's got a device.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, if it's not for reporting, it's for just staying into touch with this, that, or the other thing.
Okay, so let's continue on a little bit, if you don't, with the Kona crab, because, first of all, there are people out there that are listening that aren't even sure what Kona crab is.
Right.
It hasn't been, it's been a very well-protected asset, and most of us that go catch Kona crab are going to consume it.
Mm, you know? Absolutely. Yeah. So the fishery has dwindled so much in recent years that, a lot of people might not even be familiar with that this used to be a thing in Hawaii, that people used to go out and catch tens of thousands of pounds of this species. But just the regulations, like I said before. So there's one that prohibited the take of female crabs because those were the ones that would be reproducing.
Right.
And then there's also a minimum size regulation. Yeah. So if it was too small, you couldn't take it.
Now, explain that this discovery is made on claiming back your gear. You don't know what's in the pots. You don't know what's in, you know. So when this comes up, is any of it impacted by depth? If you got a bunch of females and you start tossing things back in there, remember there was a study before.
Right.
What's the mortality rate?
Yeah, no, that's the big thing. So you're taking your pot out, right? And you're seeing all the crabs, and then you're not getting to choose which ones you're catching, right? You don't get to choose. I want that female. I want the big one. But they're all in there. So you have to discard them
right
after you catch them. And so there's been some studies on, you know, post-catch mortality and how do the crabs do after they get caught and then discarded.
There's
been some studies, too. And a lot of the science is pointing to, you know, maybe these regulations aren't helping the fishery to the way that we thought. So it's just more than anything, the council recommended to look into these regulations, see if they would... if they're still helping the fishery.
It is so interesting because a lot of times people do that just to make sure that they are not bringing in something that's contraband.
Right.
You know, so they may not even care what condition it is. Mm. You know, they just got to get it out of their boat. So I think that those that are more likely to handle them say, I'll be back next year, lady, when these things, your eggs have become crabs.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it's like most people would say, well, If you've caught them and you brought them up for depth, shouldn't you keep them?
Absolutely. Yeah. So that's the thing. It's like we've already caught these ones, and you know, given some extreme circumstances, shouldn't we be able to, you know, keep these and, you know, start this fishery up again, develop the fishery?
Okay. Now, do you think it just based on your being there for that? Do you think it's likely that there will be more catch? Starting now.
Well, it's hard to say, but you know, can only hope. So we're, you know, it's just about the council making recommendations to see if we can't.
The fishermen are waiting. Okay.
Well, that's not a sure thing anymore because you know how long can you expect someone to wait?
You can't. Yeah.
So if it's not a sure thing if there's you know a crowd of fishermen in waiting, ready to go after this, but we can help, kind of get the word out and make sure that people know that they can maybe flock back to this fishery.
For those also, I think that there's Kona crab, as we finish up on this, it's such a unique crab. And it's not only is it considered a delicacy, but for a long time, it wasn't around for some times. And I don't know if it was there's nobody fishing or that there was no stock. But just to make sure that we dwell on that now, it seems to be evidence that it's easy to locate and find the stock.
Yeah. So there's been more surveys. There's been better data just inherently. So over time, we've gotten more confidence that the stock is actually doing fairly well.
Okay. So so in other words, gang, that's just one of the many pronged forks that we're looking at here. One of the things, and that was the other thing, the dates that we've gone to use for the that were back in like 2015 or even older than that. Is the reporting now quicker?
Well, I'm not for this fishery in particular, let's say, but reporting in general, it's trending towards being quicker. You know, it's becoming more intuitive. We're working to, you know, ways to help fishers do it more quickly to transfer the data, but also just make it so there's less mistakes. Because that's the big problem, right? If there's mistakes in the data, then we're not getting the correct numbers. And yeah, there's a whole slew of problems that can come with that.
Okay, let's move. And by the way, a lot of this stuff, as you were explaining when we talked a while back, all this energy goes into preparing the materials needed to make quantitative or, you know, disciplinary decisions about good, bad, and ugly. And I guess there's always a lot of misapprehension and a lot of people thinking, they're going to damage my fishery. I'm going to have to do more things. It's going to cost me more. It's going to, you know, I didn't get that. I mean, at least at the Fisheries Forum, when we talked about, you know, sex, life, and rock and roll of fish, it seemed to be, I don't know, I don't want to say brighter, but it seemed to be less confrontational. It's been for a while.
And you know, I hope that's the trend too, that people are realizing that it's not always just the scientist saying, "Hey, don't do this. You can't do this anymore." But you know, with good information comes good science, and that we can inform people of that. Hey, the fishery is doing better, or you know, we've learned this about a different species, and you know, it really opens up the ability for people to go out and do things.
What about the big picture? I mean, you know, I think that you know, while everybody is sometimes mired in their own little corner of the world, that they start looking at the big picture. And I do know that the economy in the country seems to be going well, to the fact that a lot of the ongoing things of research that would be relying on grants or continuing funding wasn't. Mm-hmm. Was there any of that that came up at this meeting where we were going to have to sit on our hands for a while because of lack of funding?
There's a little bit about funding, not too much talked in the meeting. We talked about there's one called the SK grant that gives, you know, different projects for the councils different amounts of money every year. We talked a little bit about that. It was reduced back, you know, each region got one project this year. So we got one funded this year. I think it was regarding Kona crab, actually, that I'm thinking about it. So good to get more information there. However, you know, in the past years, there's been, you know, different amounts of projects in different regions. So there was a little cutback in that area.
One more comment on the Kona crab discussion. How long did it take? How long did we spend on the Kona crabs at the meeting?
Oh, I mean, that's hard to say. There was a presentation that took, half hour. There was questions and answers. Yeah. Then there was another presentation about the review.
There's more than one presentation.
Right. So there was a presentation on the stock assessment. And then what happened was there was this massive review panel of the stock assessment. Mm-hmm. You know, the science center, the people that produce these stock assessments, they take it really seriously.
Oh, yeah.
And they want to make sure that they're getting the numbers right. So they have experts review, you know, get it right, go back, change what you need to change, you know, if there's mistakes kind of thing. So I don't want people to think that it was just done willy-nilly or anything.
Yeah, and by the way, gang, usually, depending on what panel we have convened at the Fisheries Forum, this gets to be always where people will question, okay, who counted them? What methods did they use? There was none of that at this forum. And that was because it was a different sort of presentation.
Right.
But it didn't sound like there was going to be much in the other arms of the meeting. There was not going to be any argument about assessments because people are, once it's done on time, it looks like I said before, I'm not trying to put your words in your mouth, but it is more accurate than it used to be. And I think that's what everybody wants to hear.
It's hard to say, you know, more accurate, but you know, it's more, there's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. There's a lot of people verifying, and you know, there's a lot of more advanced techniques that allow people to be more confident, I want to say.
Well, the term that I heard used over and over again is that there was much more discussion about effort.
Right.
So that you could differentiate between old reports that didn't really cover effort because it wasn't on the list of priorities. And now we find out that, hey, it's the whole thing.
Right, right. So yeah, a lot more look. You know, it's been fisheries managers have been prompted to look at different areas, not just catch. You know, mm-hmm. they want to look more at effort. What's happening with the people that are fishing?
Yeah.
You know, why are they fishing? Why aren't they fishing? So there's a whole, you know, social science side of this as well.
What are some of the things that you learn from some of the guys like from CNMI and other places where fish is really a big important part of their day than it is, say, in the Hawaiian and the main islands, because we have so much other industry.
Right. There's a, you know, for a lot of people, they're fishing for sustenance, yeah. you know, especially, you know, for their families, even more so than Hawaii. Like, I know a lot of people do here, and it's a big thing here, but even more so in some of these territories yeah. where, you know, it's a lot more country, let's say.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there are, we see this on the neighbor islands, maybe even more, when somebody goes to work for the man all day, and on the way home, when it's still light, pulls up to the beach, takes off his work boots, puts on his tabis, and goes out in the reef.
Right,
and
right.
And it's not because that's his hobby. It's because he's going to go pick up some pounds to take home and eat that night.
Right, right.
But isn't
absolutely.
It way more so on those islands?
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah. So that's something we have to take into account there, the culture. And just one of the things that goes along with that, like at the meeting we were talking about how there's a drive towards mandatory licensing and reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And the Mariana, so this is in Saipan, where yeah. they have that culture of, you know, more recreational and non-commercial fishing, mm-hmm. sustenance fishing. But they're still even starting to warm up to the idea that they should be mandatorily having licenses and reporting their data, because they know that reporting their data
yeah.
ultimately mean good things for them and their stocks in the future.
You know, I found out, that's another thing, and if you're just joining us, Thomas Remington is a fisheries analyst with the council, and we're trying to report in this week and next week. The main dealings in the recent meeting, which was the 176th meeting of the council. Going back to the sustenance part again, when you said one thing is, and I'm not sure if I've ever understood this, sometimes there's disagreement in the far-flung regions of the council about what commercial is and what it isn't, because there's a line where you may not think it's commercial, but it is, you're receiving something.
Right, for, right.
So I bring you my fish and you give me some breadfruit.
So there's the more fine line around commercial per se, but mm. there's a lot of talk about non-commercial, right?
Yeah.
And so like if someone's taking the fish and then, you know, giving it to their community
yeah.
or they're just selling it to their friends and family, is that commercial? If, you know, you're just getting, you know, reimbursed for your gas money or
yeah,
something like that, or if it's for anything more cultural, if, you know, if in Samoa they have a lot of cultural uses of fish, for instance.
Mm.
So there's a whole slew of issues that, you know, aren't yeah. readily considered if you're just thinking about Hawaii when you're thinking about fisheries management in these other places.
I think that's good. And I'm not sure if this is an aside, but I do know that you'll hear anecdotally a lot of things that are detrimental to these places in the council outside of fishing. It's just weather and it's just other things that impact their way of life and the flow of fish.
Absolutely. I can attest to that. I was, yeah. you know, we were in the Marianas. We were in Saipan last year. There's a
super
typhoon.
Oh, you were there for the typhoon, right?
There's a typhoon that came through and interrupted the meeting. So, you know, I got to see firsthand how, you know, even just, I know it's not just a storm, but a typhoon come through and, you know, just wrecks the way of life.
When we were talking about that, that came up a number of times at the meetings. And I'll tell you why, gang. This is pretty important because we have, generally speaking, in the main islands here, we have, especially if it's a weather system with a hurricane or whatever you want to call it, we got days to prepare. We know what's going on. We got stock. When these people, I mean, it's like their buildings can't handle what our buildings can. It's a scary thing.
Yeah, it's just a totally different lifestyle down there. People don't realize.
Were you there the actual day of the storm?
Absolutely. Yeah, wow. we were in our hotel, thankfully, mm-hmm. which was, you know, a bit sturdier of a structure. But when we drove to the airport, you know, a couple days after,
you see all the stuff.
We drove south and saw the devastation. It was hard.
I've always wondered, particularly in that part of the council, is what the next time you go back, there's trees again, and you see so many trees that are down. You think these can't possibly come back. But the good news is that they do. Was any of it scary?
Oh, I can attest to that. It was definitely scary. Some of my coworkers, you know, would probably say they were a bit more scared. Some of them, you know, slept in their bathtubs. And,
yeah, yeah.
you know, put their mattresses up against their door. It was crazy. You know, I've never been in a storm that big, and it just kind of popped up out of nowhere.
At what part of the meeting was that? Was that right in the middle?
No, this was, so let me be clear. This was not the most recent.
Not this time, but last time.
Last time. Yeah. So yeah, so we do half our meeting in Saipan, and then half the meeting would be in Guam, and it was kind of right in the middle. So we were going to try to transfer over to Guam to finish up our meeting with the locals there. And we were impeded. We kind of got stopped from traveling due to the airport being shut down and all that, right? It was just crazy. Yeah.
And by the way, in that part of the world, friends, if you miss an airplane, hope you have some money, because it's going to be about a week before you get
another. I was going to say, they don't fly out every day, but you know, in the airlines, they were realizing the situation, so they made some.
One of the things that we did get worried about in this meeting, and I think is maybe the most serious thing, was the Shutomi, or the shallow water sets closed earlier. Where were we when we found that out? What part? Wasn't that right in the middle of the meeting?
That was right at the beginning. We were just, you know, going through some of our opening agency reports, and then our executive director was informed, and she informed the council that as of 9:40 a.m. the first day of our meeting, that the shallow set fishery had closed because of the 14th interaction. Or excuse me.
Yeah,
14th interaction with the logger.
But did that? Our listener, my listeners, don't know exactly what that's about. I think that all they know is either there's no Shutomi in the store or there is.
Right. You know? So just to give a brief rundown is that, you know, as the shallow set longline fishery, the Hawaii fleet, they go out and fish for swordfish. And sometimes they interact, or they, you know, they tangle, they catch loggerhead sea turtles, which are a protected species.
And by the way, of all the ones that got caught, none died.
None died. They're all released alive.
And so you got to keep wondering if this is the definition of insanity. I mean, maybe you can explain it. What constitutes interaction? What does that mean?
So an interaction, really, I mean, it means hooking and tangling. It's not just like a bumper, but, you know, it's an interaction. So they're caught up in their fishing gear.
If they weren't released, they wouldn't make it.
If they weren't released, they probably wouldn't make it. But the fishers, you know, they're very quick about this. Typically, they notice that something's up or something's on the line. They go in and they do their best to ensure the safety of the animal. But at the same time, they're reporting it as an interaction. So it goes against, it's a tally against their limit for how many interactions they can have during a fishing year.
When they do that, I do know that it's all hands on deck. Because I do know that, first of all, some of you listeners may not know, what percentage of the shallow set boats have an observer on them?
I think shallow set is 100%.
It's 100%.
Right, so that's
where I brought it up. So that means that there is a person on that boat that is specifically charged with looking at irregularities and looking at, in this case of this, the interaction, because I think that's the biggest thing that they do. They can look at gear and they can look at some other stuff and look at geography, but most of the time I think they're looking at that, at the loggerheads. How many did we do? And should we expand the number? I mean, you know, either there are loggerheads are doing well and we can say, okay, we can have a few more interactions. And since there are no deaths, I'm just wondering why they're shutting it.
So something that the council asked, you know, the National Marine Fishery Service to look at would be to their definition of mortality and serious injury, which, you know, constitutes an interaction going against their total. You know, if they're released alive and, you know, they don't seem like something's really wrong with them, should that constitute as a tally against the
fishers? Yeah, know, for instance, if there's a beached whale or if there's a carcass, everybody feels bad, but there's nothing they could do about it. These interactions are sometimes blamed on the fisher because it's what's happening. The turtle is getting caught in the fisher's gear. But the thing that I've always been satisfied with is, okay, but it is a responsible fishery, so they are releasing these animals.
Yeah, they're doing their best to release, you know, in most cases. So it's not, you know, that we're saying that it's the fisher's fault, but that kind of the onus does go on them when they have to come back to port after hitting the certain amount of interaction.
And by the way, when that happens, there's another answer to. I mean, another question too.
What's that?
Where else are the swordfish caught? It's only in that area, right?
Well, I mean, yeah. So
generally,
I mean, in terms of like the U.S. swordfish, for instance, Hawaii catches a huge amount. I think what we're looking up to half.
Half,
or so.
Yeah.
So
I remember once it was 38%, but then it went up. It's half.
And that's not surprising. So Hawaii is a huge, the Hawaii fleet is a huge source of it, especially, you know, giving it to distributors on the mainland. They want a steady source.
So these sorts
of shutdowns are not ideal for fishermen that are trying to turn around and sell their catch.
If you're looking
at it from that angle.
One thing that I noticed is that some things end up in a freezer for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that can't be helped. But it is, I think the demand for swordfish, for the shallow set fish, is so high because it travels well.
Mm-hmm.
It lends itself. It's kind of bland. It's dense, thick protein, but the restaurants love it because of the sauces and the ways it can be prepared.
Yeah, it can be prepared tons of different ways. Yeah. It's almost ubiquitous.
Did they have some for you guys during the meeting?
No, we didn't. No, I was gonna say we didn't eat any during the meeting, unfortunately.
Okay, so before we're gonna in the next program next week. We're going to talk about some more, but let's hit a couple more of the high points prior to in the middle of the conference.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So one more thing that just jumps to mind was there was a report on Hawaii's charter fishery. You know, in the past decade, you know how they've been doing in recent years, and there was an economic report, and one of the years. The charter fishery made $50 million in gross sales, supporting, you know, 900 jobs statewide.
900 jobs, yeah.
So that's just, you know, that's always good news to hear. The charter fishery isn't always something that's really thought about at large scale, but it is out there. It does exist. You know, there's people working the charter fishery day after day, and it is bringing in a good, nice amount for the economy. So
not only is that, but here's where things happen. In many of our charter areas now, the skippers are realizing tagging and releasing is the way that you're going to more likely be able to catch fish for your next charter, because people are not going to pay charter boats to go fishing all the time if there's no fish, right? I'm sure you've heard the stories where if you are in down south, in South America, if you're below San Diego, below Mexico, you can catch two. There's just so many fish, nobody keeps them. They're just 10 million swordfish. Right. I mean, the spearfish and
yep.
Yeah. So what's happening is it used to be two things, didn't it? First of all, it was the revenue from the charters.
Yep.
And then it was the revenue from the fish. And I do know that the revenue from the fish per capita has decreased because they're releasing more fish.
Absolutely. Well, that's true. And like you said, you know, tagging or leasing, because it's in the charter boat's best interest, right? If their customers can come back and catch another big fish, right? So it's, like I said, it's in their interest to ensure that the stock is healthy, that they can catch big fish. And I would go to say that, you know, even that's the same for fishermen. It's in their best interest to ensure that going forward, they can catch more fish.
It's hard. It's always been hard for me to let one go. But I want to tell you, we're talking to, and I'll give Uncle Roy Morioka and everybody a shout out about that, especially all the help they did on the bottom fishery, on catching these fish and turning them in for science.
Lots of great data. So thankful for that. And, you know, just people like that, the fishers that realize that, you know, giving data isn't a bad thing. It's not taboo in that sense, you know, and it's going to probably, you know, it's going to help them in the long run. It's going to give us better
information. Well, I can tell you, every one of them realized that, okay, we're going to do that. It was just as productive for them to understand that they were helping compiling the data than it was having a fish box full of fish for that trip.
Oh, absolutely. You know? I mean, it's nice to know that you're part of the solution, right? And every fisherman can be part of that solution.
Did you notice, or have you discussed with some of the guys from the further outreaches that they think that there's too much taken in the main islands? They know how many people are there. And so if they have a trouble catching the species, or if something's not running, it affects a lot of people. It's not
and that's the default fallback is you know, oh, there's too many being taken, right? Yeah. But you know, it's all about data. We it's hard to say. We can't just make that claim, like, you know, there's not enough fish or there's too many being taken without knowing. And you know, that, as scientists, as managers, that's what we're trying to enforce here and push, that we can get those good data.
Okay, so what we want to do, gang, is we want to get you in tune to that. And all that we're talking about, you can go to wpconsul.org and see a lot of stuff. I do know that this year has been even better. They're getting the press releases got out quicker, and some of the info is out quicker. And it must be gratifying to see that the results already of the 176 meeting, they're already, it's on record. People are taking things out of these reports and using them.
Yeah, and that's why we do this, right? You know, it would be terrible if we were to have these meetings or produce reports or produce recommendations, and no one would be aware. So that's why, you know, that's why we come on these radio shows. That's why we produce press releases. And it's just, you know, a hope that people can, that are interested in fisheries or, you know, they care about fish or at all, can, you know, dive into this info and really become involved.
Okay, so that's going to wrap it for this week. Next week, Thomas Remington will be back, and we're going to do a second part of this. But in the meantime, if you want to hear something on the program that we haven't done, we can do this by next week. Or you can go to wpcouncil.org. And one of the things that you teachers might want to know, now that the results of these studies have come up, there's a lot of materials. There's calendars, there's coloring books, there's all kinds of really neat stuff that your kids will like. So, like I said, if you want to hear something on the program, let me know, themikebuckshow@gmail.com, and we'll see you next week. In the meantime, for the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, Thomas Remington, I'm Mike Buck. See you.
Thanks.